Welcome to Founders Future, a podcast powered by Closers.io, where we dive into the journeys of innovative entrepreneurs and explore the road ahead of them and their companies. I'm your host, Olivia Salmons, and in each episode, we'll uncover the stories behind impactful ventures, the challenges faced along the way, and the strategies driving their future growth. Today, we're joined by Bob Bradley, former founder with years of experience in running real businesses and helping others achieve the same success. Bob has helped dozens of companies build recognition and trust in competitive industries. Bob, very warm welcome to Founders Future. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hello, Olivia. Delight to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here, honestly. And I'm excited to dive into your journey and to see how we can help others along the way too. So can you take me
Absolutely.
back to maybe the beginning of your entrepreneurship journey? And then from there, what motivated you to start up your own company and jump into the entrepreneur space?
A very interesting question. I'll skip the real beginning because I think a lot of us demonstrate entrepreneurial behaviors right back in childhood. But actually, my career started the opposite end of the spectrum in big blue chips, corporates, and that sort of thing. But I got very bored very quickly. I don't fit into structures and systems. I like to do my own thing. So I then dived to tiny businesses. But I also found that pretty frustrating because there's the boss and then not much else to do. So what I in my mid-career, I suppose you'd call it, I found my niche, which was running medium-sized businesses, businesses from 100 to 500 people. And fortunately, looking back, the three businesses I ran, one a family business, one a listed company, and one a corporate subsidiary, were all facing scaling and growth challenges. I was the person who came in as the previous CEO had sort of lost steam, if you like, from the startup phase to the growth phase. So I became a bit of a I wouldn't say an expert, but somebody who understood how the challenges of growth. And then that positioned me really well for the final bit of my career, which was for 20 years. I ran a membership organization for business leaders going through growth challenges. And as part of that, facilitated loads and loads of conversations about the challenges they faced in growing the business. And that's really why I'm doing what I'm doing now, which is trying to share as much of what I've learned as possible.
And that's amazing because it is such a challenge. And I feel like maybe with you having way more experience than what I can have or provide at my age, but it's one that I feel like you have to pivot a lot. Did you find that as a challenge as you kind of move maybe from industry to industry or company to company, that there was new techniques you had to pick up all the time in terms of scaling and helping people achieve that? How did you stay on top of all of it?
Yeah, I mean, actually, you're far more modest than I was at your age, Olivia. I think at your age, I thought I knew everything. And the more you learn, the more you realize you don't. So when you get to my age, you realize as mass as you still don't know. So I'm trying to share a lot. I'm still learning a lot. But that links to what you said about pivoting, because I would say the biggest pivots for me were not moving sideways into different companies, different industries, different sectors, that sort of thing, so much as moving forward to the next stage of my leadership journey.
Interesting.
And for example, what we just talked about, realizing that I don't know all the answers, that I need a team around me, I need to draw on the best of the team. I used to joke how I was the jack of all trades and master of none, how I was the second best HR director in the company, the second best sales director, second best finance director. I needed to know enough about their specialism to be able to understand when they were when they were swinging the lead a bit, when they were pulling, when they weren't necessarily telling me the whole truth. But I could never be as expert as them. So I need to be able to work with them, understand enough of their challenge to be able to get the best out of them, if that made sense.
100%. And I suppose stepping into leadership is always a challenge as well in itself as you're learning and developing. Do you find you naturally had those skills coming into the job role and as you said before, maybe entrepreneurship started for you when you was a child, because I feel like you do get recognized when you're younger, when you're maybe in a classroom and delegating jobs to fellow classmates rather than taking them on yourselves, as you were naturally that leader that stepped into the role all the time.
Yeah, it's one of those things. There's always the argument about is leadership born or made, are leaders born or made, that sort of thing. And I think it's a mixture of both. I think there is certainly an instinct. I was always volunteering to organize things, to do things. I remember setting up a tuck shop when I was about 11 at the school because we hadn't got anything to eat at break time, that sort of thing. So I think there were some traits there that you have a tendency towards. But having said what I said about what I've learned, over my career, there's masses and masses I've learned in the last 30, 40 years of my career. So I I certainly look back at myself now in my 20s and think, God, I was so naive, so much I didn't know about how people behave and how to get people to pull together to achieve an ambitious vision, as that's what you're doing when you're building a business.
100%. So I know we have a couple of books as well that you've obviously released and let out. So maybe we can dive into them a little bit and we can talk about that and discuss how you're kind of using your time at the moment to really help other founders and share your experience. So let's talk about the book. So walk me through that. What was that process like for you as being an author and publishing some books and stuff? Pretty
Yeah,
exciting.
it was interesting. I mean, one of the reasons I retired was because I wanted to write a book.
Okay.
And I one of the things I suppose I did right, looking back, and I'm pleased to say, and pretty trivial really, but it was the first thing I did was sat down and thought about why am I doing this? Because I realized it was going to take a little bit of time, in fact, quite a lot of time. And I became very, I developed a very clear view about what I was doing. And that's been very helpful for me since, because I was clear my first reason for doing it was because I wanted to, because I wanted to write a book before I die. It's stupid, I know, but that was my number one priority.
Yeah.
But that's been very helpful since when, it's not making me a fortune or anything. Well, I never expect it to. My first priority was because I wanted to do it. But the
Right.
second priority was to share my knowledge. I became clear about that because I'm retired. I could not earn another penny and still survive. So my second priority was to share as much as what I've learnt to the rest of the world, because that just makes me feel good. There's a lot of talk amongst people of your generation now about about mental health and being what makes you feel good, being clear about that, what makes you feel bad and being clear about that. And I know that sharing things, helping other people makes me feel good. So why wouldn't I do that? So that was my second priority. The third one was to raise my profile, because I still want to work. I don't want to go and sit on a beach and do nothing. And so
Yeah.
the third priority was to raise my profile as a speaker. Let me go through that in a second. And the fourth
Yeah.
one was just to make a little bit of beer money, I suppose. And if I get a few peanuts out of it, that's great. But to come back about the third one, what do I do now, which you alluded to as well, just to fill in the gap on that. I have two dimensions to what I do. One is reaching as many people as possible, and the other one is engaging in helping in as much depth as possible. And clearly those two are in conflict.
Yeah.
So the book is at one end of the spectrum. The book is reaching a lot of people, but very light touch. The next one down is speaking. I can speak to an audience of, say, 300 business leaders, do a good job, get rave reviews, but I'll probably only chat to half a dozen of them afterwards. So it's a more touch than a book, but smaller numbers. The thing
Yeah.
I enjoy most is actually facilitating workshops for business leaders, and workshops in business for a business leader and their senior management team. It's always at the business leader level that I work.
Okay.
And then the thing that keeps coming out of the woodwork, and I seem to spend most of my time doing, is business coaching, which I also enjoy, but it's reaching one person, but in massive depth.
Yeah.
So that's the four things that I do now. And I love it. I'm really lucky. I'm able to do what I enjoy doing.
That's so good. And it's like you can hear the passion as well. And to keep going, like even if you say if it's just for peanuts, or even when you are decided to be on a beach and you've got your beer money for when you're sat on your beach and you've got your beer ready to go, it's just nice to share your experience and your journey. So I want to dive into your experience a little bit more so we can maybe leave the listeners with some advice moving forward. So when we was scaling, which would in terms of sectors, which would you say was what sector was you in with businesses? Was this more corporate kind of side, or where were we at from there, and then we can take it over.
Sure. Well, when I the businesses that are the big businesses I ran, if you like, were all in the training and professional services type sector,
Nice. Okay.
verging on some of it on the edges of outsourcing, some of it on the edges of software development. But training was the sort of core.
Yeah.
But having said that, as I say, it's 20 years that I've been working with a variety of other businesses. I've been a director of manufacturing companies, been director of distribution companies. I now see myself, as I said earlier, jack of all trades, master of none. I do not know any sector exceptionally well. What I do know, I think, pretty well is the challenges the leader faces as their business grows, how they build a brilliant high-performance team, and how they get them to pull together behind a
Yeah.
vision. And that transcends sector. The leadership challenge is the leadership challenge, whatever sector you're in.
Yeah, a lot of it, It's a topic that actually comes up a lot on the podcast. Obviously, we have business leaders, coaches on as well, but obviously founders that are very good at what they do. So whether that be fitness, nutrition, something that's not so business orientated, they very much struggle on that side of it, especially when they're put into that leadership role and they have to bring on their own team, manage their own team. It's not a skill that comes naturally to a lot of people. So is there one piece of advice you could leave for someone maybe in that position that's listening at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is to understand the transition, if you like. You see, the challenge as I see it is that the thing that makes a startup successful is that it's a successful startup is led by somebody who has a brilliant idea and is very driven to make it happen. Those not there, and the startup doesn't happen. But then, if it's successful, it's because they're good at tactics. At choosing the right deals, about getting revenues in, getting cash in, getting the business going. So get the tactics right. And they're good at JFDI, about just doing it, and that's management. So the things that get a business going successfully as a startup are a lot of focus on tactics, a lot of focus on management, on getting it done, just do it, make it happen. Now, those cultures are what drives a startup successfully. The problem comes in that when the startup gets to 20, 30, 50 staff, that sort of range, very often the business plateaus. Revenues flatten off a little bit. Profits sometimes decline because cash is more sticky than revenues. So the revenues go away, but it's then very difficult to get rid of some of the costs. So the profits decline. So a lot of businesses get into trouble in that space between sort of 20, 30, 50 people because things plateau. And the leader initially does what's made them successful to that point, which is work harder and work harder and work more hours and get more stressed and think, why is it that, I've now employed a manager, but they're useless and it's not worked, and I've got to employ another one, and I've employed, and the salesperson's, and it doesn't work, and they get very stressed and the business plateaus, and they're sort of thinking, what am I doing wrong? I'm doing what I did, what's always worked for me, and that is the problem. Because I mean, people quote it, attribute it to Einstein. I don't think he actually said it, but if you keep doing what you've always done, you'll keep getting what you've always got. And what my tip now, after a bit of waffle getting there, to people listening that are, running businesses and growing them from startup, is you have to change. You have to transition yourself first, before you can transition the business to a larger business. And what you've got to do is move from focusing on the tactics, what are the best deal, to working on the strategy. What are we special for? What are we unique for? What is our market? What is our products? And what don't we do? Which is heresy for a startup entrepreneur who grabs deals wherever they can. As you get bigger, you must stop doing that. You've got to take deals that are right for your business and not deals that are not right for your business. So strategy becomes really important. And the other thing is leadership. Instead of being somebody who makes things happen yourself, you've got to be able to inspire and enthuse a team, build a high-performing team that is ambitious to achieve the vision, or as ambitious as you, or maybe even more ambitious than you to achieve the vision. So that, again, to use a catchphrase, I'm sorry, there's too many of them around, working on the business, not in the business. Everybody's heard it, but that means being able to step back. The job of the leader is to help the people, is to support the people, so the people can run the business. Leaders should not run the business themselves. They've got to lead the team, they've got to run the management team, if that makes sense.
Makes so much sense. I mean, I always like to refer to business within sport. So if you look at maybe a football team, for example, the manager doesn't play for Harry Kane. He will teach Harry Kane how to play, or he'll give him the strategies and the tactics maybe to encourage the whole team to get on board and do the same thing. But he's not necessarily going to go and do the job for him just because he might not be capable in that one moment. So completely understand the pivots needed. So then when it comes to scaling a business, so once they have the foundations in place and they're kind of at that level, as you say, the leadership, they're now working on it. What would you say is most vital when they're looking to scale it and take it to that next level? Is it strategies with marketing? Is it more of in the leadership side and really focusing on the core stuff inside of it? What would you say is the best piece of advice you could leave for scaling a business?
I think it is possibly slightly repeating what I've said. It's two things. Get the strategy right. It's no longer appropriate to chase every deal. You've got to understand which deals are for you, which deals are the ones that you are special in the marketplace for. So you've got to get the strategy right. Because if you don't, if you carry on behaving like a startup entrepreneur, you end up with 500 deals that are all different, and everybody gets confused, and every customer gets let down because every deal is different. Yeah. So you've got to build a consistency around the strategy. The second thing you've got to do is build the high-performing team. And that, as I said just now, is you've got to recruit great people, empower them, delegate to them, let them get on with the job, and support them in getting on with that job. Of which delegation is the thing a lot of people talk about as the biggest challenge. And I'll give you one quick tip around delegation for your audience, and that is the mistake many of us, including me, made in my early days, is to delegate activities. That's a mistake because delegating the activities means that people come back and ask you, how do we do it? And that is taking away the power of their brain. You're much more effective if you delegate the outcome that you want achieved and let them work out how to do it. And there are four reasons for that. Four reasons for that. Firstly, because the outcome is usually what matters. That's what you care about. You don't care how they do it, really, as long as they get the sale, as long as they get delivered, as long as it's delivered on time, that sort of thing. So the outcome is usually what matters. So delegate the outcome. The second reason the outcome is a good thing to delegate is it's less likely to change over time. The customer might change the spec a bit. They might want something slightly different. Yeah, but the outcome of a satisfied customer with the product or service that they asked for is still the same. So delegate the outcome. Your job is to satisfy this customer, on time, on budget, etc. So that's the second reason. The third reason is that delegating the outcome is actually much more motivational for the person you're delegating it to. And people in today's modern world like autonomy. They like the freedom to work out how to do it. It's allowing them to use their brain. That's much more rewarding and motivational. And finally, real heresy for a leader that's gone through a startup is the idea that they might actually know better than you how to do it. So by delegating the outcome, you give them the freedom to find out how best to do it.
It makes so much sense. As you say, it's not about the journey that got you there, it's the goal at the end of it. So as long as we're getting the goal and everyone's on the same page about that, and then also my brain's gone, and then also on the back of that, making sure that everyone's on the same page and moving forward is quite a challenge sometimes. But finding the right person to do the jobs you can't do as a business owner, I would agree is one of the top skills you can have. But leaving that trust with people, like trusting your baby be done, but staying within your zone of brilliance and letting someone else's zone of brilliance take control and drive areas that you might not be able to.
Exactly. Your zone of brilliance has got to be leadership and strategy. The rest of it is somebody else's province.
Amazing. And so Bob, I have one final question for you before we log off, because I don't want to be respectful of your time. So to all of our listeners that maybe they're just at the start of their own entrepreneurial journey, is there any advice that you can leave them with to help keep moving forward at the early stages they're at?
Yes, and it comes from a guy called Simon Sinek. Start, as I did in my book, start with why. Why are you doing this? What are you trying to achieve? The clearer you are about why you're doing something, the more likely you are to succeed. And if I can just move on very quickly before we close the meeting to say, we mentioned my books earlier. They can find the first one on Amazon. It's called Your First 100 Days as a New Business Leader. And if you search for that, plus my name, Bob Bradley, you'll find it. The second book is about to be published, but I'm happy to share with your audience a PDF advanced copy if anybody's interested. Just ask them to find me on LinkedIn, email me, whatever, and send me a message. I'll very happily share a PDF pre-release version of my book, and they'll find that on Amazon in due course as well.
Awesome.
And finally, anybody wants to find that, I do follow up on either of those or anything else about me. I've got a website called bobbradley.co.uk, surprise, surprise, stroke. LINKS, links with a capital L, will get them to those books I've just mentioned.
Love it. Awesome. You did jump ahead of me as well, which is pretty cool. You're on point. You've done this before.
Yeah,
I was going to let you reach out there. So it's Bob Bradley across the socials, and then the book we can find on Amazon and the website bobbradley.com, was it at the end?
no, .co.uk.
.co.uk. Amazing.
.co.uk, and then links at the end is like a link tree equivalent.
Perfect.
It links to all the key things with a capital L, though. It has to be a capital L, apparently.
Capital on the links. Amazing. Perfect. Thank you so much, Bob, for joining me today and for sharing your incredible journey and insight with us. And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, please do not forget to subscribe to Founders Future via wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And if you are a business owner, specifically a coach, consultant, or agency owner, and you're really looking to scale your business and you want to enhance your sales and marketing efforts, Visit closers.io to hop on a call with one of our team and discover how we went from zero to $30 million per year in less than 3 years. But until then, keep on climbing and we will see you on the next one.